Welcome to the Faith First Podcast from Boyce College in Louisville, Kentucky. This podcast exists to provide insight, resources, and wisdom on Christian living for those wanting to grow in their faith through a biblical worldview. We will feature faculty, staff, and friends of Boyce College and Southern Seminary. At Boyce College, our aim is to put the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints first for the character formation of our students through an education founded on a biblical worldview, so that the next generation might live centered on the gospel of Jesus Christ and in service to His church. I'm Anna Lee, your host. Thank you for tuning in. And you know what? Maybe as you're talking, maybe it's important for me to add another side to the story of what I said, which is at the end of your class, what ended up happening is my schedule did change. And I realized that, you know, as I was, I don't know if the term is convicted or just given eyes to see these things in a new or, you know, newly articulated way that kind of gave categories I didn't have before. It informed me really going before the Lord, honestly, and saying, okay, Lord, I can't look to people to be what only You can be. But I see the goodness of friendship, and I'm seeing it more and more, specifically through this class, specifically the Lord using the class to inform my thoughts and my prayers and just thinking a lot about it, especially in college when you're around friendship a lot, even if that's just the, you know, mutual goodwill for one another, but you're around opportunity for friendship a lot. So I think it's on your mind more often than you think, whether it's just interacting with people or if it is truly this idea of, man, I really want deep friendship. And so, you know, I started praying for that, and the Lord just made it clear that an investment of time, like what you're talking about, feeding friendship, it requires sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And like exactly what you said, of a prioritization of certain things, which means inevitably saying no to some other things. And as you make those sacrifices, though, what I found from it was the Lord really like putting people directly in front of me that I was not expecting, and seeing just a kindred spirit with them that God had made them to think in similar ways that I did. And even in the ways that were not alike, just having this ability to have mutual goodwill toward one another, but also just like truly enjoying the blessing of friendship, which I know you're going to want to talk about soon, is just the beauty and blessing of it. But the reality that like this sort of thing, like it does take choice, and cultivating that in college, I think is a really good thing, because once you leave college, it only becomes more of a sacrifice and harder to think of, because in college, you know, I could text a friend and be like, hey, I'm going to study for these hours, and then I'm going to go and hang out for a few hours, and I'm going to go and hang out some more.
Yes.
And when all of a sudden, when you leave college, you usually get a job, especially if you've gone to Boyce College, you know, you usually get a job.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden you don't have all your hours in a day to do all the things you used to be able to do in a day.
Well, and we can extend that and say, you know, when, if and when you have a family of your own, I mean, children greatly will, I was going to say complicate your schedule, but in a way they simplify your schedule because you know, your priorities are different and what you have available changes. So different stages of life, yeah, have a major impact on this. And one thing that we talk a lot about in the class is how as one ages, friendship can become more challenging.
Yeah.
Particularly for men, and this has been established scientifically by studies and so on, that men in particular struggle as they age, as they get into the second half of life, let's say, to maintain robust friendships. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that as they come up into middle age, men especially, and of course, you know, this is a generalization, there are exceptions, et cetera, but generally it's true that men tend to be very invested in career building leading up into the middle years of their lives. And they tend to exclude, because of that intense focus on work, time for other things. And that becomes a problem with underinvestment in family, but also underinvestment in friendship. And then when work ceases, when the career tapers off, or even when one retires and one has much more time and flexibility, the kids are out of the house, you have a lot more discretionary time and perhaps discretionary money as well. Who are you going to spend it with? You know, and that becomes an urgent question. And that's when a lot of men and women, I think, realize, oh no, you know, the people around me have kind of thinned out, and I haven't made time and investment in those things. And I don't think it's too late for anyone at that point. I don't want to paint a bleak picture here. I think many people can and do rediscover the joy of friendship at that later stage of life. But what we try to tell our college students, you know, who are 18 to 22 is keep that in. Now, you know, we've told you this is a danger. Keep it in mind and try to counteract it.
Yeah.
And this is a tension within the concept of friendship. Is there's an extent, as we've said, to which I think, particularly for Christians, friendship is a duty. I mean, I'm almost reluctant to say that because I don't think it should be pursued as a duty. I think it should be pursued as a delight.
Yeah.
And we only have to talk about it as a duty at the point at which somebody tries to refuse to participate in friendship in their own life. You know, they need correcting to say, this is good for you. This is so good for you and so essential to your design. You're being foolish to ignore it. But really, you know, we'd rather use the stick or the carrot rather than the stick and say, yes, at a minimal extent, perhaps it's a duty, but really it's a duty that is so full of pleasure and significance, or can be, that it would be a real tragedy if one ended up thinking of it as a duty for very long.
Yeah.
And this is a theme I would love to expound on at length, just the delight and the unconstrained element in friendship. And this is the tension I was going to say is there's an aspect of freedom and unconstrained pleasure and excitement and delight in friendship. And then there's also, on the other sort of end of the spectrum, a measure of obligation and duty and sort of similar concepts like that, sort of an imposition from the outside. And I think both of those things are part of friendship. If Brian is my friend and I've told him he's my friend and we act like friends, I'm voluntarily undertaking obligations as well as privileges, right? If he needs help, I need to be there. Even if on a particular day I don't feel like it, which is not generally the case. Usually I do feel like being there with him. That's the unconstrained, free desire part of it. But even if it chanced to be that, you know, Brian needs me in some respect, or I need him and we're distracted or it's not convenient, that bond of friendship into which we voluntarily entered has an involuntary duty attached to it, which is if you're going to call yourself a friend, you've got to act like one all the time, not just when it's convenient.
Yeah.
Right? At the same time, however, friendship, I'm a firm believer in this. Friendship is a thing that we can choose. It is left to our choice. In this respect, I think it has some things in common with romantic love. And has less in common perhaps with familial love, because we don't, generally speaking, choose our families. Yeah. That's sort of an involuntary kind of situation, nevertheless, which can be full and rich and beautiful with love. But friendship, and man, you know, something we talk about in the class is, how many love songs can you think of off the top of your head? Probably dozens, right? How many movies can you think of that celebrate the wonder and the beauty of familial love?
Yep.
You know, fathers and mothers sacrificing for their children, children forgiving their parents, reconciliation, all these things. Tons of representation in our arts and culture, right? Yep. Of both romantic and familial love. And I think friendship is grossly underrepresented.
Yep.
It's kind of the silent love, you know, that we don't talk about, we don't think about. It's sort of taken for granted. And I think in a sense, there's something endearing about that, which is friendship's not loud. Friendship doesn't make brash, outrageous claims for itself the way romantic love sometimes does. Romantic love is loud and demanding and flashy, right? It always is. Yeah. And that's part of what we love about it, right? Yeah. But friendship's not like that. Friendship often operates in the background. But nevertheless, and all of our, you know this, you've taken the course, all of our ancient thinkers and writers, and actually all the way from the ancient time up until the modern, are unanimous.
Yeah.
In taking the considered view that friendship is by far one of the greatest gifts and pleasures that anyone could possibly enjoy in human life.
Yeah.
In other words, it is one of the very best things about being human. Mm. It's up there in the top ranks of those things which are delightful. You know, I watched this movie recently I think it was from the 80s, about this alien who comes to Earth and takes on a human body and is like, oh, I want to explore human culture, you know, and all sorts of hijinks and bizarre situations ensue. It's a common science fiction theme. But at the end, this character who's, you know, it's a human body, but there's supposed to be an alien inside of him or whatever. He says to another human being before he leaves the earth, he says, "Do you want to know what I find beautiful about you, about humanity, in other words?" And it's kind of this great moment. And he kind of names, he lists some things about human life, right? Yeah. If someone were to come from another dimension, another world, you know, and look from the outside at humanity and say, what are among the very best things?
Yeah.
I don't know whether we would think to name it, but if we were being objective, we would have to name friendship and say, this is one of the best things in our lives, but we don't give it much attention. We don't consciously think of it. We just sort of let it happen. And I think one of the themes of that course is don't just let it happen. Mm-hmm. Seek it out, cherish it, and invest in it, because it is far more vital to your well-being and to your delight. It can afford you much more delight and pleasure than you can imagine most of the time.
Yeah.
Especially when you add it up across a lifetime.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of this recently. Let's use Brian as an example. When I think about being with Brian, just being in his presence and doing things together with him, facing the world shoulder to shoulder, enjoying God's good creation, taking a walk, talking about teaching, whatever it is that we're doing. It doesn't really matter what the details are. The prospect of that just delights me. He's actually out of state right now, and this is so absurd, but I feel the fact that he's out of the state.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I'd see him this week. You know, he's got a busy family life, so do I. But I can just feel the fact that he is 500 miles away.
Yeah.
Instead of 4 miles away, mm-hmm. in some respect. And to me, that's a sign that he and I have been knit together in some way, which is hard to qualify. Over time, it doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen easily. There's been lots of sacrifice and struggle and it's sometimes hard conversations. And it's something you have to work at.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the engine that drives that is delight and joy.
Yeah.
And it's a unique kind of joy in the human experience that I wish we talked about more and held up before our children, held up before our students, held up before one another in our churches and said, this is eminently desirable. And you would be foolish not to invest in it as a major priority in your life. And, but again, that brings us to this tension and delight, this tension between duty and delight, mm-hmm. right? I think the duty follows the delight, because we enter into friendship freely. It's not imposed on us as a requirement that, oh, you've got to be friends with this person in the way that other relationships might be imposed on us through situations beyond our control. But once you enter into it, it imposes obligations on you, obligations that you've chosen. And that is a bit of a paradox that we explore in that class. But if I could just say one thing to our listeners, it's don't miss out on the delight of friendship. Mm. Because you're busy with other things, or worse, out of fear, you know, and this is where faith in the Lord comes in, and we can say, Lord, I'm so afraid. I'm afraid of stepping out there and trying to find friends. We fear rejection in friendship just as much, or maybe even more than we fear it in romantic relationships, which are also very much on the minds of 18 to 22 year olds. So there's fear of failure. There's fear of rejection. But again, the good news is if you're a human being, God made you for friendship.
Yeah.
And there are people out there whom he has appointed to be your friends for your pleasure and delight, as well as your blessing and help.
Amen to literally everything you just said. But I think like this idea of something you said earlier was this lie from the world that says you can be more on your own, and how so much of friendship, I think, is this kind of reframing your mind to God's economy, which is that like if friendship is the thing that makes your career less pursued, or if friendship is one of the things that makes like it doesn't, I feel like friendship for me, at least, I thought walking into the class, but also just walking into kind of adult life, my expectation was if a friendship is good, it will be easy and make me immediately, like circumstantially, happier in all things. And I think that in an element, there's parts of that or strings in there that are true, that like, you know, it does. Going into the presence of my best friend I am prepared to be happy. Like I, you know what I mean? I'm ready. I am ready. I always say that like the best example that I've been able to find is if it feels like it's a hot day, like where the sun is burning down on me of life, then it feels like going into a cool shade. Mm. Or if like it feels like I am freezing cold, it can feel like I am getting near the hearth of the fireplace and like being warmed.
Oh, very good.
But I think I had this expectation that it would just kind of not have any bumps in the road of any kind. And I think that's something that we in this not God's economy world that we live in. And I just want to touch on really quick before we talk emphatically about the delight of it and talk about how faithfulness in this is going to bless people. But is the fact that there's such a trend of cut out the toxic people in your life. Cut out the people that are, you know, not giving you the best. And I think a trend specifically within that I've seen come up a ton in social media is testimonies of people saying, I have this best friend of mine. And then we got in this fight and it just was just not good. Or we just got busy and fizzled out or whatever. It's this idea that we're looking for friendship. We get friendship and then either we get busy or, I mean, frankly, we fail to forgive or persevere through conflict. And we just expect that there's not gonna be any struggle. So when we get to the first signs of those things, it's like, well, we're getting busy. It's whatever. Or, right. Oh, well, we're arguing. Then I'm just going to be done with this friendship. Hey guys, if you're a parent listening to this episode, I just want to talk for a second about something that I know my parents would have appreciated when I was thinking about where to go to college. Now, your student is probably thinking about what they want the future to look like and also what type of person they want to be. And I know from personal experience that this can kind of leave you trying to choose between a college that will strengthen your career or strengthen your faith. And let's be honest, parents, your student shouldn't have to choose between a college that strengthens their faith or one that prepares them for a career. Now, at Boys College, you can have both. With 30 credit hours of Bible and theology built into every degree and a focus on academic excellence, Boys College equips students to be faithful to Christ and ready for the future. Whether they're called to the ministry or the marketplace, they'll leave prepared to serve and lead with conviction and purpose. Point your student to an education that will strengthen their faith and their future. Learn more at boyscollege.com. That's boyce college.com. How would you talk to somebody who's coming to you and saying, this friendship feels like something from the Lord, something I prayed for, something that's come to me. It's Godward, it's good, but we're hitting some bumps in the road and I'm wanting to run the other direction and be like, this is, you know, I'm cutting this out. How do we just prevent ourselves from thinking like that?
I mean, it's human nature. I think you need to go back to what your grandpa told you when you were five, which is everything worth doing is hard. It's just an iron law of existence.
Canadian grandpa say that too. Interesting.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying it's basic human wisdom, right? That we all learn, but which is enormously difficult to keep in the front of our minds, I think. And so, yeah, at the first sign of difficulty, we want to turn away. I mean, I without getting too deep into the toxic person thing. Yeah. And whether or not there are times where, you know, there are some people who can be so unhealthy to be around, one has to sort of act in self-preservation without going down that kind of counseling road.
Yeah, that could be
far,
a whole another episode.
I mean, I do think the casual way in which people talk about that betrays fundamentally, and maybe this is an ancient way of speaking, it betrays ignorance of oneself. Mm. It betrays a lack of humility. And a lack of an ability to realize, guess what? You're toxic to other people sometimes as well. Maybe you should think about ways that other people might feel justified in cutting you out.
Yeah.
Because you are not always helpful, loving, faithful,
et cetera. Maybe there's this thing called sin that could actually even permeate a friendship.
Yeah, by which you yourself have been infected, perhaps. Oh, horror of horrors to realize, you know?
Yeah.
But again, not to be too hard on people. people who think this way, which is also each of us at sometimes, it's always easier to recognize other people's toxicity than your own, even when it surrounds you like a green cloud that everybody else can feel, but you. So part of it is realizing, I had a moment recently where I was thinking about something about one of my friends that annoyed me a little bit. And I kid you not, these words appeared in my mind as a sudden shock and revelation. Oh my goodness. I wonder if there are things about me that my friends feel annoyed with sometimes, like as though it had genuinely never occurred to me before. And I'm sure it has occurred to me, but it's knowledge that we flee from, right? Yeah. We don't want to dwell on the fact that maybe my friends are my friends, partly because of things that they love in me, but also despite moments of, if we want to use the 21st century term, toxicity or selfishness or whatever.
Maybe,
right?
There's things that they actually let love cover and have never just been like, actually, every time you do this, it drives me up a wall.
Right. And we know when we're doing that for their sakes. And yet the times that they do that for our sakes are invisible.
Oh, yeah.
So I think a measure of humility is in order there, saying, man, you know, friendship can be a school of love. Every bit as much as romantic relationships or familial relationships, insofar as love is one thing, and these are just different expressions of that one thing.
Yeah.
And this goes back to your question about, like, how is friendship used of God in our lives? Well, part of it is training and sanctification. Learning how to forgive, how to deal with disappointment in other people. Like, wow, you're not as good as Jesus. And I'm just now realizing this because I kind of unconsciously hoped you would be like Jesus in my life at every moment. And you're not. You've fallen short of his glory, far short. That happens in marriage. Lovers look at each other like, every love song says, you're all I could ever need.
Yeah.
Well, not really though, right?
So
No, you need more than any human lover could ever possibly supply you with.
Yeah.
No matter how much they excel in beauty and wisdom and every other thing that we prize in a spouse, let's say, they're never going to be able to satisfy the things in you that God has made for himself.
Yes.
That's also true of friendship. So that's a lesson. And as a married person, I can say, I'm learning that in my marriage.
Mm.
I'm learning that as a parent. And also I'm learning that as a friend with my friends in different ways in each of those kinds of relationships, but they're all relationships built on love. And any relationship built on love is going to compel you, if the love is real, to take a hard look at your own toxicity as well as that of others, and to learn how to cover over faults with forgiveness and forgetfulness.
Yeah.
I think it is actually good to forget the ways that your friends have sinned against you.
Well, and I mean, like the idea there of, like, friendships really are this massive part of sanctification. And I think that when you're talking about even, like, there not being a ton of movies that are specifically about friendships, there not being a ton of, I think that it's so funny that we, you know, we see it underlined in culture, but also I think we see it so underlined in Christian living that this is this massive means of sanctification and blessing in our lives. And what you're talking about, where it's like, well, you know, yeah, where this toxicity, this sin that happens in your life, it still permeates this good gift too.
Right.
And I love in Augustine, in his Confessions, he says, "You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our heart is restless until it rests in you."
Yeah.
And I think that you're so right that it can be this just accidental, momentary thing where all of a sudden those moments of disappointment, those moments of, oh, you just sinned against me, that didn't feel good, I thought you were going to be like Jesus all the time. This moment can point you to say, oh, you're not my savior. But if you choose, I think at those moments, if you feel convicted, if you're like me, I sometimes would get scared and be like, I don't make anything but Jesus my savior. And I would just like run from the friendship and be like, this is, no, I just did something wrong. But I would encourage, if someone's listening, feeling that way, I'd encourage you to just slow down for a second. And number one, think about the graciousness of our savior. And that he knows when he knew when he gave you this friendship, that it maybe had even opportunity for you to think, oh, I thought this person was going to be like Jesus all the time. Mm-hmm. He knew that you would do that. But also in those moments of, I think, disappointment and failing to forgive, whether you're the one failing to be forgiven or you're the one that is holding on to a grudge. There's so much room to see how Jesus is the perfect friend. Like, yes. There's so much room to see what an exemplary friend that Christ is.
I was just thinking that, you know, he calls his disciples his friends. Mm. And I have to admit, you know, I teach a friendship course on friendship, as you've mentioned. And sometimes this makes me uneasy because I think, wow, well, this really might give someone the idea that I know something about friendship beyond the general wisdom. And so I have this, you know, I have this image to live up to, but I don't mind admitting what Jesus, the full implications of what Jesus means when he calls his disciples and by extension us, his friends, I'm going to be working out for the rest of my life and meditating on, because I am only beginning to understand one tiny thousandth part of what that means, because I think it is so wonderful and so unspeakably comforting that I have to almost go slow, or I'm too overwhelmed by emotion as I think about it. The condescension, that's the word that the Puritans used to use, the condescension, literally the coming down to our level of God in calling us his friends, the way God the Father called Moses his friend. That's what Jesus is extending face to face in a way that Moses could never entirely enjoy, face to face with all those in the family of God. And it's too wonderful for words. And I think a large part of the Christian life for all of us is just beginning to understand, what does it mean? What does the friendship of Christ mean for us? Yeah. I will say one of the most helpful books in helping my thoughts along in this matter and helping to trace a path through the scriptures is The Heart of Christ by Thomas Goodwin. Mm. And I just want to say I liked this book before it became cool to like it, because that book, Gentle and Lowly, was inspired by Thomas Goodwin's Heart of Christ.
Yeah.
And so now it's everywhere, you know, Goodwin's
but
message.
You were one of the true, cool guys.
I'm just pretending to be a snob about it, though. I think it's wonderful that that book has been given new life and is reaching, its essential ideas are reaching more people through that kind of revitalized version. Yeah. But the Heart of Christ, it's just a short book, and it's a little old-fashioned in style, as 17th century Puritan writings tend to be.
They can seem a little outdated.
I mean, I really like the 17th century, so it just makes it more appealing to me. But I understand for some people it can be a, you know, a little bit of a deterrent. But it's relatively easy to understand. It's not John Owen or anything.
Yeah.
And it is full of all kinds of good comfort in sort of teasing out the, like, what does it mean that Christ is our friend?
Yeah.
And the short answer is, oh, Christian, it means better things than can be articulated. And just, man, just approaching the outskirts of it makes me a bit teary-eyed and emotional. So I'm not saying we can't define, I'm sure, you know, you can go into a theology class and you can define precisely what some of the implications are of Christ's friendship, but the whole thing cannot, I think, be easily articulated. And that is one of my favorite questions to ask about friendship is, what are the implications of Christ taking on the mantle of friendship, sort of in the same way that the second person of the Trinity takes on the mantle of humanity? Mm. Like, he enters into friendship from the inside out, the way that we experience it, just as with so many other things of our experience. And so friendship itself, you know, you were talking about godly friendship, and we can talk about that in an externally directed way, saying godly friendship is directed at Christ.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about Christians who are friends, Christ is also dwelling within each friend as their individual friend.
Yeah.
So there's a circle of friends in a sense, as the disciples were with one another and with Jesus around a table,
and,
right?
Yeah. And one of my favorite Augustine quotes, and you know, this is one of my favorites because I'm talking about it all the time, but is when he talks about casting himself without reservation on those aflame with Christian love, knowing that as he casts himself on them, he's not casting themselves on the man that is there, but onto Christ who is in them and by whom they are who they are.
Yes. And the Spirit of Christ is a friend to you partly through me in whom he resides.
Yeah.
So you get Christ's friendship directly unmediated.
Yeah.
But also you get it through refracted yet another way through the lives and the words and the deeds of your fellow Christian brothers and sisters.
That's so good.
So Christ is within you and he's outside of you and he's above you. you can't escape from him, and his love will find you out.
Yeah.
Whether or not you're asking for help when you need it, it will be supplied.
And he'll use his people to do that.
Yeah.
So, I think that we've just lined out the fact that this faithfulness to be a friend, faithfulness to persevere in friendship, to prioritize friendship, to spend time in it, and to see it as something where you are shoulder to shoulder has just been outlined so beautifully. And one of the things that we ask every single guest of the Faith First podcast is to define faithfulness in the context of the conversation. Now, I know that this might be an impossible task, seemingly, but if you were talking to someone in an elevator for like 20 seconds and they are like, Dr. Flatt, the man who teaches the class on friendship in the Christian life.
Oh no, this is like a nightmare.
Friend of many and teacher of some. How would you define what it means to be a faithful friend?
I think I would start by saying faithfulness in the context of friendship is marked unmistakably when it's tested by things that can't be explained except by love. By a love that might seem incomprehensible and even a bit mad to other people. So one of the ways we recognize the authentic signature of real and faithful romantic love is the lengths to which lovers will go for one another in ways that seem literally crazy or even a bit unhinged to the rest of us, right? I think that is also true of friendship. I think the expression is different than in romantic love, but that friends will make enormous, breathtaking, almost incredible sacrifices for one another in real friendship. Some of them are grand and epic and visible. Some of them are quiet. They're a quiet drip of love and kindness over many years through many situations. I think in many friendships, it's a combination. I can think of long-term patterns of self-sacrifice and commitment from friends that are not very visible to outsiders, but have meant the world to me and are an example of faithfulness. And I think I've also experienced absolutely epic grand gestures of friendship that blow me away. And I think in authentic friendship, if it lasts long enough, that is one of the marks of faithfulness, is sacrificial deeds and words demonstrating a commitment that is difficult for other people even to fully understand. Because they're not in it, and because they don't love the friend the way you love the friend, because they're not their friend, you are. And so looking from the outside, people's jaws should drop if they could read the whole history of your friendship and say, that is magnificent and bonkers that you have done those things so many times, or that you have forgiven that, or that you showed up at that moment with all of your resources. You know what it makes me think of? I don't gamble and I don't play poker, but I've seen people play poker in movies.
Yeah.
And when someone takes all of their chips and they move them to the center of the table.
Yeah.
And they say, I'm staking everything on this. I think moments or periods like that in friendship, when your friend can look at you and somehow communicate verbally or through some other means, because not all friend communications are verbal, can communicate, I've got all my chips on you. That's the unmistakable mark of authentic friendship, I think, is ironclad commitment. Now, none of us is a perfect friend. That commitment and that sacrifice can waver. We can fail our friends. I've failed friends. I've had friends fail me. So only Christ. And if we want to talk about moments of unmistakable love, what could be greater? What could be grander? What could be more epic, more sweeping, and more awe-inspiring than that a man should die for his friends at Calvary, for all his friends, for all the people of God. I mean, it beggars the imagination even to try and grasp it, right? So that is the ultimate sign of faithfulness and friendship, in one sense, in addition to being all the other things that it is, right? We could go on forever about that. But I think that's one of the unmistakable signs of friendship. And I suppose I'm just getting around to saying the same thing that the scriptures say, which is no man has greater love than this.
Yeah.
Than that he should give his life for his friends, right? You can do that all at once. You can do that over a period of time. And I think that is the latter is more common in our lives, that it's usually not just one big grand gesture. It's over a lifetime of friendship or several years of friendship, because not all friendships, of course, last for one's entire life. Over whatever time that friendship is going to endure, to leave a record of jaw-dropping commitment, I think is something we should all aspire to. And, you know, I think maybe there are other ways to describe faithfulness in friendship, but maybe that commitment, that putting of oneself, one's resources, one's time on the line, undertaking risk for someone, again, to an extent that is hard for other people to understand who are outside of that relationship. I think that's the authentic mark.
Yeah, and doing that within a Christian context, there's just the safety of knowing that as you're pursuing Christ, he will give you wisdom in what ways to do that and how to do that. And the fact that, you know, college is a great time to start those kinds of friendships because you have opportunity to be independent on your own for the first time and to make those types of intentional sacrifices and to see the benefit of it. And I tell you what, there are friendships that started that very semester of your class that are still a very hearty and blessed part of my life. And I'm so grateful for it.
That's his goodness to us.
And yeah, Dr. Flatt, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for the way that you model friendship and humility within it. And also the way that you point us toward friendship with Christ as the perfect friend. And just thank you so much for being here today.
Well, you're very kind. It's been my pleasure. And I just hope the listeners here will see how rewarding, how much pleasure and joy there is just even in spending a little while meditating on friendship. And we've hardly touched on, you know, so many different topics that we could talk about. And take the class at Boyce College.
That's so
if
right.
If you can.
Absolutely.
I have to plug it there.
I would plug it too. It'll change your life. Thank you guys for listening. Hopefully this podcast has been helpful to you. If it has, please subscribe and share with your friends. To learn more about Boyce College, visit boycecollege.com. That's boycecollege.com. And follow us at Boyce College on all social media. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.